Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name's Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Easy hot topic. We don't even know who you are. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 308, Devil's Torture Chamber, is brought to you by Blood-Covered Sword Box. Please, no dead magicians.
Pete, welcome to the final turn of 2019 and the final turn for our Runaways podcast here, talking 308 today, 309 and 310 as the week goes on. And before you know it, Pete, it'll be next weekend. We will be saying adios, unfortunately, to the Runaways.
You know, between all this Runaways podcasting, between finishing up our Mandalorian podcast by Fantastic Geek, having finished up Watchmen just before Christmas break, I have to admit it's been a blur, but it's been the best kind of blur.
Well, Pete, let's not dilly-dally. Take us to your recap.
Nico confronts Tyrone Johnson, a.k.a. Cloak, and Tandy Bowen, a.k.a. Dagger, in the hostel. She believes they're connected to Morgan Le Fay. They, however, felt a disturbance and came to check it out. She tells them how Alex is trapped in the dark dimension, which they are familiar with. Neither group knew there were others like them. Chase turns his chair over in an attempt to get Gert to untie him, but they get caught because there's a camera in the room. Janet Stein contacts Nico, Tandy, and Ty via her digital doppelganger and tells them where the rest are being held. Ty teleports Nico and Tandy in to get them out. After the title card, Nico undoes the spell inhibiting Carolina's powers, and the coven continue to covet her. Nico binds some of them. Ty takes the parents to the Hollywood sign for safekeeping, and Tandy hits Jeffrey with a ball of light. Ty returns and teleports the rest of the Runaways into the dark dimension. Introductions now aside, they leave the hostel and enter a dystopian Los Angeles where they need to rescue Alex from a towering prison. Catherine Wilder tells her son not to become a killer. Darius shows up to take Alex and break him. Nico and Carolina make up while Chase has a flashback to his previous experience inside the dark dimension. The Runaways flee a Hummer carrying AWOL and his guys, but they're saved by Quentin, who explains Morgan runs the prison. He tells them Alex would be locked at the top of Tower A. Gert is tormented by mini monster Molly, and Ty teleports her and Chase away to the top of Tower B. Tandy touches Nico and sees her hope of marrying Carolina. Gert confesses her fears about the future to Chase, who says he'll help her whatever way he can. They and Ty see AWOL commanding his squad. Gert takes Ty's hands and sees her fear that Molly, Old Lace, and Chase will be attacked by Morgan's crows. Ty gets grabbed by guards and teleports, leaving Gert and Chase behind. Nico sails Carolina and Tandy to the other tower to rescue their friends when Quentin shows up with a distorted voice and the intent to kill. Tandy's light dagger won't work. Darius manipulates Alex with the footage of his friends in danger. Chase and Ty start to lose their memories. Alex goes to see his mother with a shiv, while Tandy throws Nico a light dagger. She turns gray and stabs Quentin. But Alex has murdered his mother, and now they are free. The group find Alex unaware, except for Tandy, who sees Alex's hope of wearing the X-ray goggles while holding the staff of one with the Fistigons, controlling Old Lace, while his hand lights up like Carolina's and eyes glow like Molly's. She tells the group, but he persuades them it was just a dark dimension version of him. Ty apologizes to Gert and gets to meet Old Lace. Tandy and Ty leave, thinking they'll see each other again. and maybe the Runaways can come help them next time. The coven calls for Morgan to perform the ceremony on Molly, whose eyes glow green.
Pete, though this episode sadly took away Cloak and Dagger at the end, there still were villains along the way. Let's talk about Bronwyn.
You had to expect, with a larger cast count in this episode, we wouldn't see Morgan Le Fay with Elizabeth Hurley seemingly sidelined, Matt. So Bronwyn first up off the bench of baddies.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. You know, more good guys in the episode means your big bad for the season doesn't need to be there. I know this, Pete. We do get a version of Darius here, set on breaking Alex, set on having him, you know, do the deed, cross the line, kill his mother, etc. And Darius has Alex do just that.
To think that Alex has been broken here in this dark dimension, and then what we'll obviously talk about when we look at theories, what Tandy's vision of his hopes could mean. But to throw you Darius, to throw you AWOL, who we've seen bits of, to bring back Quentin, to give you this version of Molly that is obviously Gert's worst fear. They're sprinkling in these mini bosses to Morgan's big boss.
And I suppose, I mean, snark aside, I somewhat questioned that decision. Certainly the pieces were interesting ones, but the Runaways plus Cloak and Dagger versus Morgan, I think would have been a more satisfying outing than this succession of mini bosses, sometimes separated by whether you're in the A tower or the B tower. It was just a curious decision. I guess Schwartz and Savage and company, you know, this was the plan and they went with it. I would have liked to see the alternatives to this plan.
I don't fully understand what Quentin's presence signifies. He's helping them 1 minute and then he's been impaled with a sign and speaks with a manipulated voice and wants to kill them the next. We saw Nico's sister Amy change from herself into him. So I don't quite understand what's gone on there, other than helpful 1 minute, bad the next.
Pete, can we add Alex to the list here? I know it wasn't really Mom whose life he took, but has now the line been crossed and he can't go back? Is he dark side Alex and there is no redemption?
The vision definitely needs some explaining beyond, oh, that was a dark version of me. I want to have all your powers and all your tech and all your stuff, and you're nowhere to be found. Readers of the graphic novel know that Alex is at one point the traitor, that he is the mole feeding pride information, and he takes a dark turn. How much of that they're going to do, I kind of thought they'd done their little dance with that when Alex had the alien son, who we've now completely dropped inside him, but remains to be seen.
Well, Pete, let's now move to theories here. My best theory got blown up by this episode, which is we are going to have the team-up potential of Cloak and Dagger for what is left of the season. Instead, it ended up being, you know, this jam-packed episode plus the little sizzle at the end of last week's episode. That certainly would not have been my choice had I been in the been in the command chair for season 3. And Pete, this coming from me, somebody who has been pretty upfront with Cloak and Dagger, maybe being, not even maybe, Cloak and Dagger has been my least favorite Marvel TV show. I was going to say that we podcasted, but of course
more than Inhumans?
More than Inhumans, and I'll tell you why. Inhumans,
I'm shocked.
Inhumans broke me because it was so terrible. And it was so fun to podcast. The fact that Inhumans had storylines about, legitimately, for people who haven't seen Inhumans, this is not a joke, there was a multi-episode arc about marijuana farmers in Hawaii living on the beach. and infighting amongst the marijuana farmers. It was so ridiculous that it just became, I mean, it was that full on, you know, bad movie, good time kind of thing.
Matt, are you talking about a show that has Anson Mount, who's since gone on to play Captain Pike on Star Trek Discovery, uttering one word in the space of 8 episodes? Is that the same?
Inhumans was terrible by accident. Cloak and Dagger was boring by design, which is to say, they tackled some really, really legitimately weighty issues, sex trafficking, drug abuse, police overreach, things like that, serious things, but then didn't marry those issues with kind of a compelling show, whether it's action adventure, which I think most of this comic stuff is best suited in, or whether it was going to be other storytelling tropes. The two pieces weren't melded together, whereas in Humans, it was big, crazy, dumb, and what you got was a big, crazy, dumb time. Still, though, Pete, to have Cloak and Dagger cross over to the show and to get all the credit that they got in the carryover, you know, referencing the Loa and referencing their adventures and whatnot, it really felt integrated. It really felt like one universe in a way where that's been the lacking thing in Marvel television, is really having those crossovers beyond, you know, oh man, let's go fill up at the Roxxon gas station. Look, we did a crossover. They had this fun crossover moment here, and to blow it on one episode, I was shocked.
But hey, Matt, they'll come see them next time.
Yeah. Hey, episode writers, Warren Sue Leonard and Stu Salonik, look at my chart that I tweet out every so often showing the decline of Marvel TV. I know in Marvel, everything's always going to be great. The best future is the future still ahead of us and all that. But it was bittersweet to say, hey, let's team up on our show next time without really the realistic situation is, as they were filming this season, they must have known cancellation for Runaways was likely, cancellation for Cloak and Dagger was likely, the shuttering of Marvel Television as a division was likely. But I guess in Hollywood, the there, Pete, just a dream.
To bring this crossover, which had been talked about for some time, to fruition in the 8th episode of a 10-episode season feels really late. And then you consider the amount of exposition that has to be worked past. There are people that don't watch Cloak and Dagger who they're confronted about information of living in an abandoned church and seeing hopes and fears and Loa and Roxxon, Dark Destinies, intertwined natures, all sorts of things. Really not that complicated. I feel like the show kind of made it more complicated.
That is a completely fair perspective, and one that I had not considered, even though, as I just ranted, I didn't like a lot of the Cloak and Dagger show. The fact that they had all these references, it was like, oh, I remember that, I remember that. But you're right, Pete, nobody watching needs to have 8 boxes checked.
It felt a little too inside baseball to that other show with which we're really familiar.
And I think you're right. If it was just like, how did we get here? You know what? After we got our powers in New Orleans and we had some crazy adventures, Pete, you could punch up the dialogue in the, you know, in the second draft, but we had some crazy adventures. We decided to come here because we saw signs of trouble. Okay. Boom. There we go. One sentence. Punch it up a little bit, but you're right. You don't need all these references, which if you've seen Cloak and Dagger, you get, and if you don't, then it's just a bunch of words.
And Matt and I have both read in the Runaways comic run where Cloak and Dagger come over and help them. And clearly there was a desire to imitate what happened there. I just feel like it smacks of they had no idea this show would be ending in two episodes. And we got to get this crossover in with a show that had not yet been canceled and was canceled thereafter. And then Runaways gets its notice afterward. I just can't help but feel like they tried too hard.
Well, I can only return to what we have heard from people inside the TV industry, that you really are inside a bubble for your show when your show is on, when it's in production, whatever it might be. And everybody in Hollywood, from the highest high to the lowest low, knows what the tough times are like. They know what cancellation is like. They know what firing is like. They know what change in at corporate is like, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody is there against the odds. So the notion that your back is, on a certain level, your back is always against the wall in terms of, is this the final season? Because ratings, because change in direction, because whatever, because it's too expensive, because it's, this division is getting melded with that division. You're so used to it that maybe you stop paying attention to the fact that, no, this really is likely the last season for a bunch of things that Pete, you and I have talked about on the podcast before, you know, the Disney purchase and more power over Hulu and all of that, that was reasonably anticipated by people sitting on the sidelines. But maybe when you're in the middle of the game, you don't see that. You just see, I got to get from episode 301 to 310 and I got to tell the best story I can. And what's the company edict? The company edict is leave the door open for more because, you know, make, that's the business that we're in.
I mean, you mentioned Hulu, Matt. How about that 18-day season 3 exclusive for Hulu?
Yeah, I mean, to know that this season will be on Disney Plus, it is January 1st, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that shows, I felt a little bad for Runaways. And probably at the end of the day, what does it mean? It means more access for all the episodes of this show to an eager audience. I feel like even post Handmaid's Tale, I think Hulu still doesn't know what it is. It's kind of like, to use AMC as an analogy, they weren't anything until they took a bet on Mad Men, and then they were big, but at a certain point it was like, yikes, we need something else because Mad Men's going to stop one day. And they tried out some more genre stuff, and then they ended up with Walking Dead. And I think with Walking Dead, it was like, and now we're a player. Now we can have misses. Same thing with Hulu. It's like, I don't know. When this show was being cast 3 years ago, almost 3 years ago, February 2017, for Hulu, and you know, how, what am I trying to say? What was the future looking like then? Well, Hulu was the reasonable alternative to Netflix, and Disney clearly wanted to diversify holdings in general, and Hulu seemed like a good spot because they could see the writing on the wall that they were going to be exiting Netflix before too long. So this was a good, Hulu was a good interim, but you know, the fact that this is now just going to live on the catalog on Disney Plus ad infinitum, I guess that's just the way it is.
There's a line in this episode when they're in the dark dimension and they leave the hostel about the rules keep changing. And I couldn't help think of that as a metaphor for this show, for Cloak and Dagger. It dawned on me as well when we're looking at the dystopian Los Angeles, like, okay, are we going to get the future LA where there's a horrible earthquake and Chase is sending messages back to his father? Like, where's that thread that was in the first two seasons of this show and has been nowhere near the story this season? And then, you know, you're making all these deep, deep references with Cloak and Dagger. I mean, that they talk about how they've spent time in the dark dimension in a record store, in a mall, at a gas station. Like, we don't need to know that. And that's chewing up storytelling opportunities for the sake of, hey, we have this other show.
Well, and maybe therein lies the rub. They're doing this crossover. Why? Is it for creative reasons or is it for business reasons? And And I don't know. But it seems like increasingly what we're circling around here, Pete, is the notion that this is a show, this is an episode rather, and maybe there's elements of the season that's like, hey, Hulu will buy. We have a thing. Hey, it's kids, you know, because we're already doing the broad audience stuff on ABC. That's not exactly major ratings, although, you know, two seasons of Agent Carter, nice run, albeit cliffhanger, hopefully resolved in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 7. S.H.I.E.L.D. chugging along as a smaller and smaller player, but a player nonetheless in the broadcast schedule. So that hasn't exactly lit on fire. All right, let's do TVMA. Okay, well, that didn't quite work. All right, let's do, you know, the kids these days. What with their Snapchats and their stuff? So I think maybe it's just like, we have a product. Here's a market. Let's put them together and see if something hits. Versus, say, to be fair, you know, Cloak and Dagger, showrunner Joe Pikowski, that was his passion project. That's something that he pitched years ago, and they said no. And then a home opened up for it, and they said yes, and he made it everything that he wanted. Even if there's giant elements of it that I did not care for, the guy made the show he wanted for the artistic reasons that were on his radar. Is that true of this episode? Maybe not.
And they got to square off in a place where the story could continue, the story could have ended. They left New Orleans on a bus. They were going to go help people elsewhere. Okay, that squares with this episode, that they drop in, that they help the runaways, that they solve a problem there, and they teleport away. The decision with Tandy throwing the dagger and Nico able to manipulate it and now keep it is a curious one.
It is. And I mean, the gray dagger, named thusly. I mean, surely, Pete, in the next two episodes, that will have to get used. I mean, if not, that'll really be
Chekhov's gray dagger.
Yeah, I would hope so. I hope it's not something where, oh, let's have faith that the show is going to get renewed. Let's then have faith that people will remember in a year that there was a gray dagger. Or let's have faith that this could now be a plot point that Nico can keep in her bag and she can take it to the Runaways crossover on Cloak and Dagger. Versus, like, let's just have the upfront storytelling guts to say, here is a thing. And then in the next episode or two, Nico can say, wait, maybe the gray dagger will do it. Ah, yes, victory. And then the crossover will have counted for more.
So this ceremony that is called for at the end of the episode, and Molly, as the only runaway that did not go to the dark dimension this time, seen in a fear of Gertz and the green eyes.
Pete, I will give the show credit in this regard. The notion to take Molly, the youngest runaway, the most innocent, they backed off this season a little bit on her doe-eyed nature, and I think rightfully so. The character, the actress, both a bit older than when the show started. But to take her as still the most gullible, still the least experienced in the ways of the world, and now she is the one that is the ticking time bomb. She is the one where, not quite a mole, but she is now the one, the sweetest one, who's now being turned. You know, Pete, this is, can you imagine if George Harrison broke up the Beatles? It's that sort of thing. So I think that is a good twist there for storytelling.
Well, Matt, from the most innocent runaway to the wisest listener of Fantastic Geek in the Netherlands, let's hear from Fred.
Hello, Matt and Pete, and all listeners to Fantastic Geek. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Marvel's Runaways Season 3, Episode 8. Or should I say, Cloak and Dagger, Season 2 and a Half, Episode 1. Good action-packed episode. Had to get used a little bit to Cloak and Dagger, but it's okay. Two new kids with new powers, and I'm planning to watch the first episode of Cloak and Dagger anyhow. But the bickering between the kids of the Runaways goes on with the kids of Cloak and Dagger. Always the theme of trust and don't trust. Didn't change much with them coming along. Funny was, of course, Dale, Stacy, and Victor landing up at the Hollywood sign. apart from the beginning with the witches and Jeffrey and the end with the witches and Molly, no connections here to Morgan Le Fay. Mainly playing in the Dark Dimension again with this sorcerer Quentin the Great. Of course, this Dark Dimension ties into Cloak's way of transportation because he goes through the Dark Dimension, as I understood. I watched an introductory video about Cloak and Dagger explaining them and explaining something about their roots in the comics. I didn't understand the whole thing with the magician's coffin with the bloody swords in it. Didn't go anywhere, that story. Or was it just to fake his death? Bit lame then, when you open the coffin and he's not in. I understand Alex's biggest wish if you see what Dagger saw in his dream, namely wanting to have powers like the others. And we see a nice picture that all the powers come together in him. He having no power apart from being a very intelligent nerd. But is he shifted now somehow from a servant of Morgan Le Fay to a servant of the Dark Dimension? Or does this Dark Dimension and this Quentin have a direct link with Morgan Le Fay? We do see a wall painting of Morgan Le Fay in Dark LA with her crows in the background. So there is some connection there. Well, Quentin does say something very ominous. Morgan is pulling at the fabric between this dimension and yours. And if Morgan gets her hands on the staff of one, the Dark Dimension will swallow the normal world as a whole. So is this Quentin actually a good guy? But when he gets his hazy eyes later on, he is possessed by Morgan Le Fay? Please explain, guys. This is why I listen to your podcast. Well, at least one of the reasons. Okay, enough questions for this time. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Pete, some great questions raised by Fred there. I have one back for him. He referenced an introduction video to Cloak and Dagger. I'm just curious, was that part of Fred's version of the episode? Heck, how does Fred watch Runaways in the Netherlands? Inquiring listeners and podcasters want to know.
I was concerned watching this episode, as I've mentioned in our podcast here, about the number of deep references to Cloak and Dagger. And they're not fully explained. And I think, as I indicated before, that it eats up storytelling time for the sake of reference. And Fred is illustrating my point. I'd like to believe that, you know, he needed to become familiar with the characters to understand what was going on and that he wants to check out the show. I would urge him to check out Cloak and Dagger. Matt, probably not so much. They did tackle those weighty topics. I don't think there's been anything near it when it comes to Marvel TV. Human trafficking, you know, most notably in the last season and with a really noble aim. So there's that. But I think the quicksand that this episode suffers from comes from their inclusion.
Fred also pointed out that Morgan is called out by Quentin as pulling at the fabric of the dimensions. So Pete, once and for all here, is Quentin good or is he bad? Is he trying to get Morgan out of the way so he can take over, kind of General Hux style, if I may be permitted a Star Wars reference here? What's the deal with Quentin the Magician?
Quentin is a character in the Dark Dimension.
But does that make him dark then? Does that make him evil? And how evil is he in relation to Morgan, who apparently may risk the existence of the Dark Dimension and ours?
I don't know. I have a question to your question. Does Elizabeth Hurley get credit for having graffiti of her likeness appear in this episode?
I would imagine that probably the standard, and this is just me completely spitballing here, I would imagine that probably the standard actor contract allows for you know, like their image, the image of their character to appear in episodes that they are not in. Maybe there's some sort of end date on that, you know, like for this season or this season plus three times next season or something like that. You know, I know occasionally we have, you know, on the desk, it's the picture of, you know, dead dad, you know, from whatever show. I would imagine if she's hired for this season, whether it's for every episode or they gave her an episode count or whatever it is, it's probably, you know, it's probably no big deal to then say, whether it's in the contract or, hey, can you do us a solid since we're paying you all this money already? Can you sign off on this particular portrait appearing in an episode?
Well, with two episodes left here, Matt, not a lot left.
There's not. And I know I've read the quote. Yeah, you know, I'm spoiler free, but I've read the quote, the kind of season three ends at a natural end point. I don't know exactly what that is. I guess it means it's not going to be Agent Carter style, you know, huge to be continued and then not continued. So I will welcome that arc. I don't have any sense of us starting to wrap things up yet. To be fair, I mean, episodes 9 and 10, it's probably in episode 10 when you should defeat the season-long villain somewhere about two-thirds of the way through and then start your wrap-up from there. So we'll see. Hopefully the conclusion of this episode, these two concluding parts to the season, hopefully they stick the ending here.
Always helping us to start and finish our work, Matt, are the people of patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Yes, Pete, particularly as we start to wrap up our own epic run here of this busy November and December. The support that they've given us is so, so appreciated, particularly as, you know, we've been watching the storage and the bandwidth tick higher and higher, and can't wait for the month to roll over at, you know, in due course and whatnot. But that support, that financial support, so, so appreciated, particularly this time of year.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive content, all sorts of levels to choose from, but it only takes a dollar to get you in that door, a mere quarter a week for all 19 podcasts that we've produced, and then our backlog on fantasticgeek.com, always available regardless of where Apple Podcasts is cutting us off. Can't afford to contribute? Go ahead to Apple Podcasts, and leaving us a review is always free and definitely helps.
Absolutely, and all sorts of goodies there on Patreon. But Pete, one of the best goodies is talking to you on Twitter, and that's a freebie. How can people do it?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J, Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 10,998 followers, can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do me in touch with the podcast comment on fantasticgeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/fantasticgeek with a PH, all one word, like it today.
Well, Pete, we will be back on Tuesday to talk episode 309 of Runaways. Then, Pete, 310 on Thursday, and the season wrap next Saturday. The end in sight. A little frog in my throat as we get close to the end here, but I know for this podcast, the time's come to an end, so I will say adios to all the listeners and give you the final word.
What are you going to do? Hope me to death? Mom's new Porsche, to make this long story short, when the cop pulled me over, I was scared as hell. I said, I don't have a license, but I drive very well, officer. Almost had a heart attack that day. Come to find out the girl was a 12-year-old runaway. I was arrested.